Blog Talk Radio.
You got to make the morning laugh, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy. La-da-da-da-da-da, feeling groovy. Hello, lamppost, what you knowing? I come to watch your flowers growing. Ain't you got no rhymes for me? Feeling groovy. I got no deeds to do, no promises to keep. I'm dappled and drowsy and ready to sleep. Let the morning time drop all its petals on me. Life, I love you, all is groovy.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee talk radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media project. If you'd like to be a part of the media project, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer and let the little dialogue box know that you're interested in Be the Media. Oh, welcome, welcome. I'm very excited about our show today. Debbie Lynn, my faithful co-pilot, is on the other side of the pond, as they say. She's in London. I'm riding solo, but I have an incredible guest with an inspiring story to tell. If you'd like to enter the conversation after a bit, dial 646-929-2495 and press the 1 to be put in the host queue. Debbie Lynn usually watches the chat room, but you can comment and ask questions there as well, and I'll do my best to bring your thoughts into the conversation. I'm just wrangling a lot of stuff when I'm wrangling the board and the chat. But here's the situation today. State legislatures all across America are back in session. Our Congress comes and goes, but should return to D.C. about the time today's snow melts. Now is the time for the conversation we're going to have today. So let's get started. Do you ever wish you could muster the courage to call a senator or visit your representative? Do you wonder what kind of person can do such a thing? Do you fear you lack the skills? I don't even know what that means. But are you worried how you'll be treated by your elected or by their staff? Our show today is inspired by Coffee Party Be the Media volunteer Greg Resick. Greg follows Coffee Party internet radio shows and heard our guest Kathleen calling to share and ask questions. She learned about Wolfpack on one of our shows and became involved. When she was going to make visits to her state elected, she used one of our shows to call in and ask for advice. Greg followed up with Kathleen after her visits and posted her story at www.coffeepartyusa.com/activecitizen2. The blog is titled, "I'm Capable of It, So Why Don't I Do It? One active citizen who's a model for us all." Greg's not able to be with us today. I'm going to introduce Kathleen in just a minute, but I want to hit some highlights of the blog just in case you've not read it yet. I'm paraphrasing a lot of this, of course, so my apologies to Greg. He's a brilliant writer. So from the blog, too modest to say this, but Greg called her a model citizen. She shows us all how powerful we as citizens can be. And without intending to generate praise, she offers lessons on how we can all have an impact and more influence in our government. Kathleen emphasizes throughout the conversation she had with Greg that she's not some constitutional expert. She says, I'm just following my conscience. Kathleen stays well informed. She always voted in elections, but says that that was the extent of her involvement with government until recently. Like many of us, she too had begun to lose faith in politics, politicians, and in our government. That was until Facebook and her discovery of groups like Coffee Party USA, thank you, and Wolfpack, the group I follow. In fact, she credits the Coffee Party Blog Talk Radio Show interview with Michael Mineta, Director of Organizing for Wolfpack, for changing her perspective about what needs to change and how she could be a part of that change. Possibilities of how she and the rest of us could help fix our broken political system. In her words, he, referring to Mineta, gave me hope that I had lost. He moved me so much that I looked him up on the internet and I jumped in with both feet. And we're glad she did. It's people like Kathleen, Michael Mineta, Harvard Law professor and activist Lauren Flessig, and thousands of other ordinary Americans across the country who are working to make a difference. They're visiting their elected officials in the state houses across America to encourage them to call for an Article 5 convention to amend the Constitution, to end corporate personhood, and to publicly finance all elections in this country, essentially a reversal of the Citizens United decision. So what did Kathleen do? I'll give you the details, but I'll let her tell you more in a minute. She started out by attending her first ever public hearing on resolutions in the Massachusetts State House and Senate. Kathleen wasn't ready to speak, but she sat and she listened to the people like Lessig and Mineta. She learned, she became inspired, she grew confident in her newfound knowledge and understanding about this proposed solution. After that, Kathleen called her state rep and her state senator and asked for a meeting to talk about those resolutions. She started by calling the office of her state representative and reports making an appointment was easier and less painful than getting an appointment with her dentist and a lot less stressful. 2 days after her call, she was shaking hands with her rep who recognized her from where she worked. This really does reinforce the point that the people we elect to state capitals and to D.C. represent us, and they are really our neighbors. Kathleen also talked about how it was that her preparation put her at ease. She spent 45 pleasant and even personal minutes talking with her rep, but stayed on focus. The resolution in Massachusetts, as it turns out, is in joint committees now, and her representative was not on that committee, but Kathleen knows this. People talk. They go out to lunch together. They pass each other in the hall. Hopefully, her rep will be an advocate and get into conversations with other reps and senators to move the resolution forward. We call that conversations that generate conversations. She also made a point of telling her rep she believes that there are good people in Congress who want to do the right thing, but that too many of them are too beholden to money. He agreed with her that Congress is broken and that something must be done. Hooray! How perfect is that? It might surprise you to learn that Kathleen's political party affiliation was never brought up, and I think that's an important point. The appointment with her senator went a little differently. She met with a staff member. They spent an hour together, and the aide was interested in his own agenda as well as hers, but here's where preparation paid off. She stayed calm. She stayed focused to her agenda without being rude. So in Greg's opinion and in mine, Kathleen behaved like a model constituent. She prepared. She stayed focused. She remained respectful in both offices, knowing that was how she would be taken seriously. She did not allow herself to be distracted. She picked out things they agreed on, and she made sure to even express her gratitude for the service before she left the meeting. The moral of the story? Get engaged. Kathleen explains it this way. Do something instead of complaining, and do something tangible. We're drawing a line in the sand and intend to take our government back and change the way it functions. It's our government, she states emphatically, Craig reports. We're their bosses. We hired them to do a job, and if they're not doing their job, it's up to we, the people, to tell them, listen, you're not doing what we hired you to do. Kathleen wants us to pay attention and do something, in a nutshell. In her words, proposed legislation comes with a majority of support through the country, throughout the country, and doesn't get enacted. How is that possible? That's a clear indication that they're being bought and paid for by special interests. Unless people step up and do something, the status quo will continue and continue and continue. There's power in numbers, she reminds us. I have a voice, and that's free speech. I'm going to use it. If enough people do the same, I believe we have a chance to drown out the money. When asked about her transition from frustrated citizen to active citizen, Kathleen offered this simple two-step advice. Find your power and see how easy it is. She assures us that it's not as hard as we might think. She'll tell you that she's not an expert, just a layperson following her conscience, and that there are a lot of people. She doesn't really consider herself to be an activist. What she says is this: I am an American. I'm a proud American. And I don't want to leave this mess for the next generation. In all good conscience, I can't. I couldn't live with myself if I didn't try. The civil rights movement also gives Kathleen inspiration, and I hope we'll talk about that a little today. The question she asked herself is, why wouldn't I do this? It's not going to require the level of bravery those people showed. It's like donating blood. I'm capable, so why wouldn't I do it? Well, without any further ado, I'm going to open Kathleen's mic. Kathleen from Massachusetts, welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Hello, Janine. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a joy. You and I have spoken on the radio before, sometimes on my show, sometimes on the shows of others, and I'm always a fan of the contribution you make, so this is a special treat for me.
Well, thank you for the compliment. I really appreciate it.
Oh, so my hope today is that you can share some of the experience that you had in this process of going from frustrated citizen to active citizen. And also, I'm inviting our listeners on the phone or on chat to call in or chat in if they've had experiences like this, because maybe in a bit we could actually either offer advice or share war stories or whatever. So the number, if someone wants to call in and ask Kathleen a question or share their transition from frustrated citizen to active citizen, the number is 646-929-2495. So I was especially taken, Kathleen, by the blog post where it describes making appointments with your electivists easier and less scary than setting up an appointment with your dentist. that tells me a couple of things. One, it tells me that you really thought it would be scary. But how did that play out for you?
I was nervous because it was the unexpected. I didn't know what to anticipate. I was nervous, and I decided the best way to calm my nerves was to take Mike Moneta's insight that they're just regular people. They're just like you and I. And that helped a lot.
Oh, that's brilliant. Is that something that he shared with you personally when there was testimony going on at the State House, or is that something you saw on Facebook or the Internet somewhere?
We have conference calls every week, Wolfpack, Massachusetts. We all get on a conference call, and he's kind of a cheerleader of sorts and is always there with an encouraging word. And that was one of the little pep talk tidbits that we got, and I took it to heart.
Right, well, and you actually realized that was true when you called your representative, and he turned out to be one of the clients of the or, you know, knew you from where you used to work.
Right. I worked at a bank, and he was one of my customers, and we lived in the same town, and he ran for selectman. I voted for him. You know, I knew him for about 7 years, and so that's where he began his political career, and now he's in the House of Representatives, and I voted for him again.
Excellent. And so but he recognized you. So how did that make you feel?
It was wonderful, and I was really shocked because I hadn't seen him for 20 years. And right when I reached out to shake his hand, he said, "I know you." And I said, "Yes, I know you too." That was an icebreaker, so that made it a lot easier to calm my nerves.
And definitely confirming of the message, they're just people. So the other thing you did, the other thing that you did was prepare yourself for these meetings. And maybe you could share with our listeners what the process for preparing for the meeting looked like for you.
Okay. Well, I have to give you and Greg and Bobby credit because you helped me kind of get my preparation in order. So what I did was an outline like we did in high school English class. And, you know, pick the points I wanted to make, the most important points. And I just did some reviewing the night before of the resolution that's in the legislature right now, and also a bit of history of money and politics and, you know, the Citizens United decision and Buckley versus Vallejo, which kind of opened the money started opening the money floodgates. And I just tried to, you know, convey my understanding, you know, with the disclosure that, you know, I didn't go to college for this. I don't have extensive knowledge of the Constitution, but I know right from wrong. And I know the Supreme Court decisions, although, you know, they felt they based it on the Constitution, they had an adverse effect, and we're all paying for it.
Right, right. So, as a matter of fact, the fears from the minority opinion said, you know, this is going to swing things a different way than we believe that it will. I thought that was important. Excellent. Okay, so you prepared yourself. Tell me what it was like to pick up the phone and make the first call.
Actually, we make calls every week to all the legislators, one at a time. And usually you speak with an aide, and I would say 99.9% of the time, they're wonderful people. They listen. They pass messages along. They're very accommodating. So when I called Representative Cantwell's office, I told the aide I was a constituent of his and that I had something I'd like to speak with him about, and could I get an appointment? And the aide said, "Well, where would you rather go, the state house or his district office?" And I said, "Well, the district office would be great." And within, I think it was 3 days, I had an appointment. And
excellent.
Yeah. So, you know, and it was the first time that I had done anything like this, and things just fell into place. It was easy.
Well, and I just want to add an affirming experience to that. When I was in Washington, D.C. on a coffee party lobby day, we, of course, sat there in the reception area waiting for our appointment. And in all three offices of my congressional delegation, there was a person sitting at a telephone out there near a reception, and all they did was answer the calls of people like you and me who call in. They actually love it that you call them. They've got a whole system of making sure they capture who you are and what you're interested in. And frankly, they're bored to tears if people don't call. And so I think it was a shock, a pleasant shock to me, because I always worried that it was some gatekeeper. You know, there was a gatekeeper that was going to answer that phone. And what it really is was a guy kind of sitting there going, call me, call me. And so I'm with you 99.9% of the time, which is actually a higher representation than nice people in the public in general, I think. But you're right. They have to want to do that job. So you made the call, and you didn't die. And as a matter of fact, you were actually excited by the time you hung up. And but don't you think that's the place where people stop? They stop before they ever lift a phone? You know?
I would say, well, I would venture a guess. I don't know for sure. I can't speak for other people. But, yeah, I mean, what really rallied me was Mike. He just... It was the way he spoke about it and his genuine belief that we can change things. And I guess I just felt like, well, I'm throwing caution to the wind and I'm going to go for it.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's really brilliant. And you had done calls prior to making your appointment. Do you prepare as much when you're just making calls as you do when you intend to go visit somebody face-to-face? What kind of preparation do you put yourself through to just make a phone call and express an opinion?
I don't really do much prep. I have the wording of the resolution in front of me, along with the name of the committee and the bill number. And, you know, just basically have it in my head that I ask if the senator or representative has a position that they're aware of on the resolutions. And if not, I just tell them I'm in support of it and that I encourage them to support the bill. And, you know, a lot of times I leave my name and phone number. If they want more information, I'll do the best I can to provide it for them. And it's really simple.
Oh, that's great. So you did mention in your interview that you use the term Article 5 Convention instead of Constitutional Convention. And maybe you could help our listeners understand why picking your words makes a difference here.
Well, I think because not a lot of people know about an Article 5 convention. I certainly didn't. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it entailed. And saying it's an Article 5 constitutional convention implies that we're trying to change the Constitution. What an Article 5 convention actually does is allow delegates to get together to propose ideas. And when two-thirds of the state meet and they pass a resolution, it forces Congress to call. When resolutions are proposed in two-thirds of the states, it forces Congress to call a constitutional convention. And it's a place where we propose ideas. We don't actually get to amend the Constitution right at the convention, because the resolution that comes out of it has to be ratified by three-quarters of the states. So, you know, I think the wording of it is important to reflect what it actually is. And, you know, the idea of changing the Constitution concerns, I think, just about all of us. It's a big deal.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
That's why I made sure.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
Oh, no, I just, well, staying on point, this is interesting because you're doing a really great job of staying on point right now. And it was a theme, it was a major thing in Greg's blog. And so I'm wondering, mm-hmm. given this experience that you've had, do you have any tricks or tools or tips to offer us about what helped you stay on theme and stay on topic while you were sitting there either talking to your representative or to your senator's staffer?
Well, I had my outline in front of me, and, you know, if they spoke for a few minutes and, you know, expressed their opinions or their thoughts or their concerns, I did my best to respond to them, and I knew I wanted to encourage them to support the resolution. That was my main goal. If we can get them to support it and get it passed, we're on the path. So, you know, it was tough because I love a good discussion. I love hearing other people's opinions, but I was there for one reason. And I was thrilled I could stay on point.
Well, and I think that that's an interesting distinction that you just made, because you weren't there to just chat. You were actually there to convey a message. And for those of us that like a good discussion, as you put it, sometimes that's a challenge. So you're right.
Yeah.
It sort of blocks in what you're there to talk about. It helps drive the point home. And I can see how that would be totally necessary. Now, you also mentioned in the interview that your political affiliation never came up. And in some of the comments I've seen in our posts related to the broadcast today were about how folks felt like their political affiliation was held against them in a conversation they had with some with their elected. And I'm wondering, mm-hmm. was it just something unsaid? Was it something you avoided? How this really is about an issue and not about partisan politics. And so I'm mm-hmm. curious how you kept your political affiliation out of the conversation.
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess I'm not really sure. They didn't bring it up, and I didn't represent myself to the left or to the right. I guess I stayed neutral, and that's what helped. My senator's aide kind of talked about some things that, you know, were part of a discussion if you were sitting over coffee and chit-chatting about politics. But and I have my own opinions, so I really wanted to jump in there and have a debate or a discussion. But I somehow managed to keep myself in line. And to be honest with you, I'm not really sure how I did it. I bit my tongue. I really did, you know.
So you didn't allow anything partisan to come into the conversation at all. You didn't volunteer it. You didn't express it. And when you had an opportunity to express it, you chose not to.
Yeah.
Well, I don't doubt it's tough. I don't doubt it's tough. But I also think that it's brilliant in that I think the place that we witness things going sideways, so to speak, is when the conversation morphs from the issue at hand to assumptions about one another that are possible when you identify yourself as one side of the fence or the other, or, mm-hmm. you know, as a... You know, you don't walk in and say, hey, I'm a Marxist, and I want to tell you about the Citizens United decision. I mean, it's kind of like coming into the ring, you know, ding, and you got your gloves up, and you're coming out of your corner. Whereas, you know, I suppose the same is true from the other side of the spectrum. You know, you don't walk in and say, hey, I'm with the Tea Party, and here's what we think. And we mm-hmm. want you to think this way. People don't do that. It's not effective. But we can. I think it's easy to know that. And sometimes it's hard not to be baited into that without intending to. And it is one of the arts of transpartisanship to recognize when you're being baited and to not take the bait, because it's really not, you know, the color of the socks you wear that is an issue. What's the issue for you? It's an Article 5 convention, and that's it.
Yeah. And, you know, I really think one of the keys, even though this is, it may sound really simple, was the notes I had sitting on my lap, because they served as a reminder. This isn't about ideology. This is about one thing, correcting the way our democratic system is supposed to work. And I guess I'm an idealist, which I don't think is a bad thing to be. Well, part realist, part idealist. but the notes sitting on my lap, it kept me focused.
So. Oh, that's a really interesting point. It was like a cue. You know, here's my index cards, here's my notepad. When I went to Congress to meet with my congressional delegation, I wore a jacket, you know, like a business suit jacket. Now that sounds, it wasn't so much for them, it was for me, because it reminded me this was more of a business trip than it was a coffee clutch, you know. So I tried to dress for the occasion, you know, but I'll tell you, I was wearing jeans and a jacket, you know, because I'm an Oregonian and that's what we do. But I think that there's a lot of little things that you can do to remind yourself just, you know, what is the purpose of this meeting? And back in my business days, I started every meeting with any one of my associates with, what is the purpose of this meeting? And I find myself psychologically doing the same thing, you know, what is the purpose of today's show? What is the purpose of my conversation with Kathleen? And that is so simple, just like holding your notes. But it makes all the difference in the outcome. So genius. So you also talked about how the civil rights movement, and I assume you mean the Freedom Riders, the civil rights movement of the 60s, but perhaps you even mean the civil rights movement of today, how that movement inspired you, inspires you now, and gives you some hope and some courage when it comes to doing what you're doing today.
It does. You know, when I look back on the what happened down south, you know, with the buses and the violence and the separation that existed, and I guess the way I look at it is the bravery, the fearlessness, the courage, they were really climbing a steep mountain. And comparatively speaking, this is nothing. I'm not under the threat of violence. It doesn't require the level of courage that they had. And so that's part of why wouldn't I do it? It pales in comparison. And I think to be inspired by the past and to learn from the past is part of how I roll.
Well, I totally get that. I mean, you know, a visit to your state legislature is not, you know, you're not risking having fire hoses turned on you or dogs released at you. Or, you know, I think I'm a little older than you, but I remember that time. And I have often called the 60s the decade of political murder, because those people were being killed, and they were being disappeared, and awful things were happening, not just to public persona like Dr. King or Malcolm X or President Kennedy, but to everyday people who just tried to register others to vote, or tried to go to an integrated school, or just tried to sit at a lunch counter, or, you know, sit rather than stand in the bus. And So I think it's commendable to sort of see yourself as learning from them, and I hear, but you haven't said, honoring them in what you're up to. Because let's face it, you're Kathleen. You're from Massachusetts. You could hang out at the beach a lot if you wanted to, although I hear today that's not a good idea.
No.
And you don't, you know, it's not like every time you step out your front door, this is in your face. And certainly that was true for them, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
But they,
so,
you know, they, I'm sorry, go ahead, Denise.
No, I said go ahead.
They, you know, the bottom line was they wanted to change the way things were. And they took a stand. That's all they did. They took a stand, and they were willing to go the distance, to force change. And, you know, that's the bottom line. If we want change, we're going to have to make change. It doesn't just happen. Sometimes you have to force it. And that's how, you know, that's kind of how I see things right now, is that we need to force Congress to do what we want them to do and give us all a say in how we're governed, which to me isn't going to happen until, you know, we get the financial part of this under control and allow for publicly funded elections.
Well, we certainly see what happens when we sort of stand by and allow change to be made upon us, yes? Is that a good way to put it? I mean, I like that you said, if we want change, we have to make change. And I would add to that, if we don't, someone else will, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And because there have been huge changes in the last few years. And the fact that we're revisiting voter rights, the fact that we're revisiting public school issues, the fact that we're revisiting so many of the issues of the 60s and 70s is actually quite profound. And I introduced myself. The last Wolfpack meeting I went to, Kathleen, it was up in Portland, Oregon, and I introduced myself as that grandmother who is really angry that we're having to reconsider all this stuff again. And so that's the change, you know, if you draw a straight line from here to there, wherever there may be, the changes that will happen without our intervention, without citizen intervention, are, you know, more issues about women's access to health care, more issues about religious freedom, more issues, more issues, more issues. And
mm-hmm.
so I, of course, am preaching to the choir because you're clearly, we can clearly sort of on the same wavelength like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what I see is that we've got some hands up. People were very patient with me. Let me have you all to myself for a while. But if you're willing, we can open up a couple of lines and say hello to folks. I'm going to start with our first caller, first in, first out, area code 808. 808, welcome to Lunch with Loudon. Who am I speaking with today?
Hi, Janine. This is Cameron Michaels. How are you doing today?
Cameron, welcome to the show. I hope, you have been listening to Kathleen. I can see you there. So,
my camera on my computer?
No, I see you on the studio board, and I thank you for allowing me to have Kathleen to myself for a few minutes. Do you have questions for Kathleen or comments about your personal transition from a frustrated citizen to an active citizen?
Well, I have a little bit of both. I've actually done what Kathleen's done. I've gone down to Washington, D.C. and addressed my senator, which they absolutely passed me on to their aides. I've spoken mm-hmm. with my representative's office, who passed me on to their aides. And I always find it interesting because in the old days, right, they used to talk about walking around money. And that was just code words for bribes. And you end up looking at this and saying, well, where did that walking around money go? And I tend to think, and I think you're probably along the same lines, is that it just ended up finding its way into a corporatized, organized structure called K Street. And so it's gotten me quite angry, the same way that it has you, Kathleen. What I wanted to figure out, and this is where I've gone, and I'll ask you these questions because it really kind of drove me into the area I'm starting to go towards. But how would you try to find an approach for multiple people who have, you know, jobs, they have children, they have insurance, they have bills to pay, to be able to get up in an endurance, utilizing an endurance method in order to, you know, be able to, you know, continue the fight, to have them all get up and demand out of their out of our representatives that they represent us. What approach do you see to be able to go about doing that?
Well, you know, where I'm associated with Wolfpac, their whole philosophy is getting resolutions proposed in all the all the state legislators, and basically calling your rep, calling your senator, taking 3 minutes to just make calls and express your support that you want corruption out and you want the people back in.
How does that demand it from them, as you were saying? We need to demand that they do. If we demand, how do we ensure that they're going to take action on that?
Well, by demand, I guess, I mean by speaking your mind. That's all.
Okay.
Maybe demand was too strong a word, but that's kind of how I view it, is kind of like, you know what, I'm fed up. I'm beyond fed up. And this is what I want you to do. This is what I want you to do, period. You know?
Here's something that I've been thinking about. I'm a believer that that there has to be incentives, right, for people in Washington to get bills across. The incentive for them is that lobbyists are going to go and they're going to pay the $10,000 a week that these people need to raise in order to get reelected, right? And so they're going to say, here, we used to be congressmen, so we've written these bills on behalf of the people we represent, and, you know, we'll help you do your fundraising, not a problem. See if you can probably get this bill on the floor and try and see if John Boehner will look at it or Harry Reid will look at it, right?
Yeah.
So what's to stop the people from doing the exact same thing?
Well, the way I view it is the 28th Amendment, the Article 5 Convention, is the first step. The second step, in my opinion, is the American Anti-Corruption Act, which really complements it and takes it to the second step, where we get lobbyists, super PACs, corporations, millionaires and billionaires from bribing politicians and buying them. So it's not like, you know, we stop at step one. We have to see it all the way through. And the American Anti-Corruption Act, it's .org, by the way, it's passed constitutional scrutiny by lawyers, constitutional scholars.
I know I'm throwing pretty hardball questions at you.
Well, and that was, if I can interrupt for a second, that's a perfect segue because my next question was going to be about that. You've pretty much spoken to what it is. Hobby Party, of course, supports the Anti-Corruption Act and the many organizations that are actively pursuing passage of this. There's a huge list of people in the House, the Senate, from both sides of the aisle who are buying into this concept, and I find that very exciting. You will have seen posts about this on the Join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page and also on the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page. And you'll see more in the future because that's an interesting perspective, Kathleen, that this is a 1-2 punch. And ironically, to sort of demonstrate the non-self-serving nature of these movements, if indeed this act were to pass, the Anti-Corruption Act, Wolfpack would be a thing of the past. You know, it's like this, but it would be fine. It would be fine because there would be an equal playing field. You wouldn't need special interests to use that structure called PAC to fund their efforts. What do you say about that?
My thinking basically is if we basically reverse Citizens United by declaring that corporations are not people and they're not entitled to protections that are afforded to human beings, mm-hmm. and money is not free speech, they're not allowed to spend unlimited amounts of money, that will be part of the Constitution. Now, with the Anti-Corruption Act, I love it. I completely am on board. The one problem I see is that we've had campaign finance reform before. McCain-Feingold,
yes.
They totally dismantled that. The Disclose Act, excuse me, I almost said that wrong, that's gone. Everything that we've tried to do has been dismantled. They've ruined it. So we're back to where we were.
Yes, yes.
So you know, we're going to have to anticipate, I think.
And you know, that's also true that the woman senator from Alaska and one of the men here from Oregon together put together the Follow the Money Act, which was another mm-hmm. shot at the same thing. And, you know, there are many roads to Rome, so the notion that we would support all of them is not a waste of time because it's kind of like the battering ram at the castle gate, you know. Pretty soon we're going to get through. But
yeah.
You're right. We're outgunned and we're outspent. But what you've talked about today and the thing I hope our listeners take away today is that the voice of one person does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's difference in a different domain, yes?
Yeah.
You're telling someone that you voted for what your vote is contingent upon now.
Mm-hmm.
You're
mm-hmm.
actually meeting face-to-face, and you probably know this, but there's like a scorecard algorithm that they have. You know, postcards are worth this, and phone calls are worth that, and face-to-face meetings are worth something else. And when they create their what does my constituency think on this issue, they factor all those things in. You know,
mm-hmm.
an email is worth this. A fax is worth that. And so I promise you that telephone calls and face-to-face meetings are very high on the list of political capital that a citizen can generate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
So even though you and I don't operate off K Street, the whole idea that we can actually operate off Main Street and that it's not as scary as it sounds. You know,
mm-hmm.
how many times has Credo sent you a thing and said, hey, call your senator now and tell him this. How many people pick up the phone?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope after listening to you today, Kathleen, and the process you went through to be able to do that,
mm-hmm.
that you will inspire, we will inspire together, that next time people get the call, call your senator, call your representative, that they're just a little bit more likely to actually pick up the phone.
Yeah.
So, do you have anything to say about that before I go to the next caller?
No, no.
Okay, excellent. So I'm going to area code 620. We have just a couple minutes. Area code 620,
oh, yeah.
You're on Lunch with Loudon.
Okay, this is Jack Golding, and I almost seem to be rushed. And
hope you're not last. There are others behind you, so I hope you're not last.
Oh, I hope he extended.
No.
Okay. All right. What I mean to say, is that it's going to take a lot of education. People, they are Tea Party guys. They're in the same damn situation. That's a failing situation, and I don't understand. Well, they it's the people that vote for them that are stupid.
Well, yeah, careful with civility pledge. You got two dings.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they are not. They are. They're not. They're not civil. You take the dog whistle crowd you take people like Gohmert and
there are people who don't know dog whistle
and
dog whistle talks about having stolen fragments of language and have them mean something more than or other than what you would think they mean. So that's what Jack's talking about when he talks about dog whistling. Well, and Jack, have you ever called your senator?
That stuff. Yeah, and did I what?
Have you ever called your senator or your representative, or have you ever visited them at their office?
Well, you know Huelskamp. He is my representative in Kansas. Though I live in Oklahoma, he'll consider that 620 is Kansas. I don't know. He's getting to be an unreasonable character. I hear him on MSNBC and CNN, and the people who listen to Fox News, they are pretty much ignoramuses.
All right, Jack. three strikes and you're out. So my apologies, but the civility pledge requires that the name calling and the whatever. But I get Jack's point completely. Mm-hmm. He's sort of an adversarial situation in terms of his politics and the politics of his elected. And I'm sure, and I certainly read at Join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page today and other places in the past that if you let people know, if you come in with your red coat or your blue coat, so to speak, and sort of make that stand before you make a stand for something you want to say, it's not as easy. And certainly doesn't generate the transpartisan conversation that, of course, Coffee Party believes is more empowering to moving to where you want to go from where you are. As a matter of fact, Kathleen, in your interview, you basically talked about finding things you had in common with that staffer, even though there were things with which you'd love to argue. And I think finding common ground is a huge, it's not a tactic. It's an attitude. And I think it's harder to do if you think of it as a tactic. But if it's really your way of being, if it's I'm here to find common ground with you, I'm here to tell you what I believe about something, and to answer questions about that if you have them. Was that helpful to you in that conversation, that notion?
Absolutely. And part of Wolfpack is that it's transpartisan. It doesn't matter if you're a liberal, if you're a conservative, if you're Green Party, if you're, well, I guess with Libertarian that might be a little different. I'm not sure. But that it applies to all of us equally.
Well, there's a lot of libertarians that would like to see an Article 5 convention, I promise you. Yeah, they may not want to see it for the same reason you do. But they are citizens, and they have their set of solutions. You know, their set of solutions may be different, but they still have the notion that it ought to be the people because the Congress is not doing its job. I mean, more people think there's life on Mars than believe that Congress is doing a good job. Seriously. Or that the Martians have landed. Seriously, more people actually believe that than believe Congress is doing a good job. And so you don't have to, what did I use before, a Tea Party person and a Marxist? You could be any kind of citizen and believe that Congress is letting you down. So the idea of the convention, the Article 5 convention, is to actually allow people, not dollar signs,
right,
but people with pulses and respiration rates and blood pressure, you know, actually communicate to their government. And the whole idea of, I mean, okay, I'll give my 2 seconds on this one, that I was a business person. My business was incorporated. Corporate person for me meant this corporation could have a checking account. You know what I'm saying? Because only people have checking accounts, right? The corporation could have a checking account. The corporation could hire employees. The corporation had a relationship to the IRS. I mean, it was like a focal point. The corporation was a servo mechanism with which I interacted with society. Yeah? That kind of corporate personhood, I don't think anybody argues with, per se, especially because that's the way most of us, which are small business people, actually relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that somehow that whole idea, I promise you, if every corporation was like mine in terms of its relationship, you know, feeling like it was a part of the community, feeling like it was, you know, an entity of commerce within a society, we wouldn't be having this conversation because there wouldn't have been anybody to pay for the lobby to say, my cash talks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, and there are a lot of people on either end and all across the political spectrum who agree that money is not speech and that corporations are not people. And they only buy in as long as there's something in it for them. And so by our speaking out, the way you have, Kathleen, so brilliantly, and the way that Wolfpack is preparing people to do this all across America, at the state level where these decisions are being made every day, that we will be a united force in that belief, in that position.
Mm-hmm. And essentially what we're doing is circumventing Congress. We're not putting it in their hands. We're taking it in our own hands and asking our state to do the right thing. And we have more say on the state level. Mike said that it takes 3 to 5 calls to your to the state legislators to make a difference. 3 to 5, because they don't hear from people, like you said.
That's right.
You know, they sit around and, you know, they do the paperwork and everything, but, you know, the constituents, it's less frequent that the constituents call in, considering the numbers of constituents they have. But 3 to 5 calls, you know, if people jumped on board and made, you know, 3 calls a week even, you know, we could really get going and really get a movement going. And it's simple.
I agree.
So
of all the times I've ever called anybody in a political capacity, only one time did anybody answering the phone ever try to change my mind. And I got to say, that's a really small percentage. That's not 1%. That's not 0.1%, right? And that one person, here's the little tip I'll give anyone who might run into this. You just go, oh, I'm sorry. I called in to tell you what I think.
That's beautiful.
It's not like I had it planned. I didn't have it planned, but it just came out of my mouth like I was shocked, because all the times I'd ever called anyone before, they're writing down my name and what I had to say, and I go, wait, I'm sorry. You know, what I didn't say, you know, the Woody Allen subtitle to what I didn't say was, you didn't call me, I called you.
Right. Oh, that's priceless, Janine.
So, any last words before I let people know about other Blog Talk Radio shows from Coffee Party USA?
No, I just hope that they'll get engaged. That's the biggest thing. And, you know, help to run the country the way we want it run.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kathleen. And anyone who you're welcome. Anyone that hasn't read the interview between Greg and Kathleen, please go to www.coffeepartyusa.com, and there it'll be right on the home page. It is time for me to remind you of a couple things. One is that Blog Talk Radio shows happen all through the week with Coffee Party USA. Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style with Bud Fields. Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern, Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson. Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Lunch with Loudon, Here You Are. Saturdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. Coffee Party USA has not benefited from Citizens United. We are a totally grassroots-funded organization. If you'd like to become a member, go to coffeepartyusa.com and find the big red member button. If you'd just like to donate, that's okay, too. We take contributions, small and large. We are an all-volunteer organization, and we appreciate every penny. My thanks to the anonymous donor who gave us $250 this week. I was just thrilled beyond belief. If you'd like to be the first $10,000 donor, tell you this has been a wonderful show. I appreciate Kathleen, Cameron, Jack. It's been a joy. And so from me to you, Coffee Party on.